Hey guys, it's Daxton.
And Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one,
we use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing.
Which, of course, we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So, if you're a creator or podcast curious,
check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
All right, so as we wait for Will Fleming, you know, this is what Will does. He likes to play hard to get. This is what he does.
Is he a diva?
You know, he's one of those guys, those corporate guys that, you know, you have an 8 o'clock meeting and they show up late to show like how powerful they are. I should let him wait. This is what Will's doing
so
right
Tom
now.
So Tom Coughlin would not like Will Fleming because Tom Coughlin believed on time was late.
Yeah, and I have some audio. I think you listened to it from a podcast that McCourty was on. Devin McCourty. Where he talked about some of the things that Bill used to get people to show up on time.
Mm.
It really is kind of comical the length that Bill went to kind of convince guys, just force them to get there early. It's crazy. He said, you have the clicker over there. You may have to pull him up, or Nick, pull him up over there on your end.
He needs about a 30-second buffer.
Oh, he needs a 30-second buffer. All right, so right now the Red Sox are on the sea. I know, right? I can't do the interview with no pants. What do they think I am? I don't have any pants on. If this was Zoom right now, he'd have a suit and tie up top, and then he'd be basically just his underwear down below.
Oh, natural down below. Or a backpack.
All right, now. So, there he is. Now he's in red. So now he's on it. Hey, Will, good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing good. You're on with Andy Hart, not Andy Gresh. He's on vacation.
Oh, baby Hart. What's up, Andy? Been a long time. How are you, man?
I am great. How are you? What, you got pants on? We just presumed maybe you needed a couple extra seconds to throw some pants on before the interview. So,
No, just pawning off my children to go do stupid summer things. But we're all good.
Been there.
I mean, it is the All-Star break, so pants are optional. But
that's right.
There you go. This is the vacation. So, I mean, honest to God, this is kind of working out just how you would dream it to work out as far as for the Red Sox, that is. Every single, like, obstacle, every challenge, every good team, every team above 500. I mean, even handling business with the A's, and then you have the Kansas City Royals, and you just get beat up in that first game on Friday, and then you win back-to-back games. And yesterday's game was awesome. I mean, isn't this about as good as it can get, especially heading into the trade deadline for the Red Sox?
Yeah, I think it is. I think they're checking all the boxes you wanted them to check. And yeah, it certainly helps that the Orioles and Yankees are tanking at the moment. You get yourself right back in the divisional race, and maybe that's the last little push that convinces everybody we're not just fighting for a wild card. If we really add, we might make the division really interesting. And I love that Alex Cora keeps bringing that up. I think, you know, it's another sign of him just reading the room and trying to push the right buttons. But, yeah, I said to Joe two or three times this weekend, as you look out on that standings board on the Monster, like, are you kidding me? If we left Fort Myers on March 25th and I told you he'd be 11 games over 500 within 3.5 of the Yankees, firmly in the third wild card, you would have signed up for that in blood. So, and the player performances are a part of it, too. It's these young, sustainable guys. I think the word dream is the right one, Christian, and I think everything has broken right for this team.
Will, you mentioned Alex Cora's comments. We had the greedy comments. We had the window, and now the window's a door, and the way he's sort of escalated things over the last few weeks. Who's he talking to specifically, or who do you think those comments are most targeted at?
I thought when he talked about getting greedy the first time, it was into his own clubhouse and at his players. But now the door, the aggressive, more greediness, it's firmly at the ownership group. I think that's pretty obvious. And I think I've probably said this to you guys 10 times, and it's true. This manager, this man, does not say anything by accident. He doesn't. I mean, he is just an ultimate operator in the best possible way. And he said it to us leaving camp. He said it in April and May and June. We're going to be in this thing. We're going to be playing meaningful games. And I think that when he says that, he's saying loud and clear, it's time to add, it's time to buy. And we all know the implications of whether or not their expectations meet with his for his long-term future here, too.
So we're talking to Will Fleming. And back to Cora real quickly, Will. I feel like based on how well things are going for Cora as far as how he's betting on himself. I think the Red Sox are at risk of losing him when the season is over based on the demand that he will get from other teams. What do you think about that?
Well, I think they've been at risk of losing him from the day the season started. I mean, the industry knows what a great manager he is. And this year is another piece of evidence, a feather in the cap, whatever you want to say. I mean, I know you guys think I sometimes sound like his agent because I rave about the job he does so often, but I'm around him every day and I watch the things he does. And I talk to players and every one of them says that he instills them with confidence and belief and also patience, that in a way that I just don't think many guys do. And in game, he never makes a misstep. He's on top of the rules in a way that other managers are not.
Very,
you know,
Belichickian.
You think about the pitching change with, yeah, it is. He is. I think it's a real parallel.
Yeah.
And he embraces this market and the history of it. He clowns other managers. He knows the rules. He's getting umpires to overturn things. It's really interesting. And I, you know, Lou has been on this from the jump, and I agree with him completely. In some ways, this year has been more about the Red Sox proving it to Alex that they are worth him hanging around for because he will have 10 suitors. Whoever he wants, if there's an opening, they will make the first phone call to his agent. That's just a guarantee. He's the best guy. If he doesn't have a job in Boston, everyone will want Alex Cora. The question now is, does he want to stay here? Does he get shown enough this season, this deadline, that this club is invested in him and the future and winning now? The young core has done so much, I think, to prove to him that this is a great place for him going forward. But I think this deadline is enormously consequential as it pertains to whether or not Alex hangs around.
So to use Giselle's word, they can show their appreciation for Alex Cora by being buyers at the deadline. Will Fleming, if you were in charge of that buying, what's the shopping list, both in terms of positions? I know we hear right-handed bat, more pitching, but also are there names that you in your mind have already started to target?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we all do that. And I think then we all sort of are made to look stupid because it rarely works that way.
Yep.
Like if you told me in a dream scenario, I could have anybody I want, I'd say Vladdy Guerrero at first base looks pretty darn good. Or somebody like Pete Alonso or even Christian Walker or Yandy Diaz, because this team, the numbers are amazing. They've gone on this great run. I think they're 1-8 over their last 9 against left-handed starting pitchers. And all of those guys, just like Justin Turner, they destroy left-handed pitchers. So, and I think the longer it takes for Casas to get back, the more you say, well, this is not just a cover till he comes back. We don't know what Tristan can be when he'll be back. So I think you could kind of do a two birds, one stone thing, first base and right-handed slugger. And I think those guys are more acquirable for less than you think. Now, probably not Guerrero, right? I mean, I think for him, you would have to give up probably more than you're comfortable doing. But you asked me to dream about it. So, I mean, in a perfect world, if the Red Sox wake up on August 1st and Vlad Guerrero's on the team, that's pretty spectacular. Then you start talking about starting pitchers, and I think they need at least one, maybe two. But I don't think you have to go crazy, and I don't think they will go crazy and get in the, like, Garrett Crochet market where you're talking about trading elite top prospects. Like, the Yankees are interested in Crochet, and apparently the White Sox are demanding on their top two or three prospects. The Red Sox will not do that. They should not do that. But I think there are a lot of people like Nate Eovaldi and others who are just, like, innings eaters, playoff-type badasses. You know Nate would love to come back here. I think that's the kind of move that would excite me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was going to mention Nate Eovaldi because that was a name I had heard of, and talk about, like, coming back to, you know, your roots in a way.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
And Will Fleming, I know you were obviously paying attention to that game yesterday. Can you tell us anything about the home run that Devers hit? Because we're going to get into this later. Did he really break the chair? Is this just some, you know, new myth that has been created? Like, what do you know? What can you tell us about the home run that broke the bleacher seat?
Well, I mean, Fenway is, what, 120 years old?
So yeah, but the seats are new. The seats are new, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, maybe a fan leaned back a couple weeks ago and loosened it up. But I will tell you this. When he hit that ball, it was I audibly gasped. I mean, he absolutely destroyed that ball. He did. And he's been doing that now for a month. Now, that one was different. And the reason I think the Roy Hobbs factor is a little believable on this is you don't see balls hit on a line that hard, that low into that part of the field. Like, it was 115 miles an hour, his hardest ball of the year, and it was a screamer. So, like, I don't have a hard time believing that it hit. No, it's just one panel on the back of the seat, right? That doesn't seem apocryphal to me. He destroyed that ball. He's carrying the offense. By the way, I just want to say, I think it's a cool thing that he's skipping the All-Star game. I think he's, as I said to you guys last time, like, I think he's really, for the first time, leaning into a leadership role. And
This is a health thing, though, right? That's just not a leadership role, though, Will, right? I mean, he's hurt.
But you would go. You would go to the game. Like, if he were a younger player and in awe of, like, man, I'm just going to go celebrate myself and hang out with all the other stars. Like, it's one thing to not play in the game. He's not going. Like, he just wants to sit around and recover and relax. And I think that, to me, is maturity and leadership because he's not buying into personal accolades. He thinks his most important job is to help the team in the second half, and I think that's why he's not going.
This is the case, one of those that we're never happy. Wasn't it Kemba Walker who went to the All-Star game, played, hurt his knee, and then it hurt the Celtics? Now we got a guy that's putting the Red Sox first, and people want to criticize that he's not going to the All-Star game. So we're never happy.
No. My thing was, like, it's just not, to me, you know, this is not a sign of leadership. It's more of a sign of maturity that Eddie mentioned because, you know, you just don't. What are the pats on the back going to do for you when you're hanging out? Like, it's just a waste of time.
He's getting healthy.
I'd rather stay at home. I'd rather go on vacation than go on some scheduled bus trip to the stadium and then stay there for 4 hours. That sucks.
So, Will, along those lines, let me ask you that because I thought it was interesting when they had the video posted by the Red Sox of Alex Cora announcing the All-Star selections that he did mention. When he was giving Devers his information, you know, I know you don't want to hear this, but you're the face of this franchise. And I found that interesting that they promoted that publicly, that their best player, their $300 million man, isn't necessarily the happiest to embrace that role. I think we've all sort of expected that and understood that. What is his role as the face of the franchise and their best player? How uncomfortable is he in that role? Kind of coming on the heels of Xander Bogaerts, who embraced that role.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible. They're just totally different people.
Yep.
I mean, Xander is like the gold standard of all time in that way. I mean, Pedroia was his own guy, Ortiz his own guy. Even going back to Mo Vaughn, all those guys really, I mean, they just stood in front of the cameras every day and answered all the questions. I think it's important to think about the fact that the language barrier is an enormous part of this. It's hard to really answer the bell in that way every day when it's your second language. And it's getting better for Rafi, but I think that's a big part of it. Still just not comfortable leaning into giving all of these interviews and talking in a nuanced way in English. But I just thought, you know, like yesterday, Bayo's struggling. He gives up a home run and then another big hit the next inning. And Rafi gets the ball back and throws it to him and walks very close to him and is overtly kind of screaming at him as if to say, buddy, move on. Let's go. It's time for you to take the next step. I think he's doing more things like that. And I, the thing he did against Gerrit Cole in New York, he never would do that before. I think he's just really leaning into leading by example. And I think that's okay. I mean, I think that's why Alex Cora has tried to anoint Jaren Duran as like the vocal, you know, rah-rah leader in the clubhouse, which I think Jaren is leaning into too. I don't think that that Rafi is necessarily uncomfortable being the face of the franchise. It's just not quite his personality. And again, I think that's fine. Not everybody is built to be the vocal leader of a team. And I'll tell you what, as much as in a perfect world, I wish he were, you know, as vocal as Poppy, like, I'll take what he's doing with his bat right now. Like, yes. That to me is leadership enough. He's carrying the team.
You mentioned Duran, and as a guy watching from afar, I don't know if anybody has turned around both their production and their reputation or likability as quickly as he has. I look back on last year, and I quite frankly didn't like him at times. Remember those comments about the catching a fly ball at twilight at Fenway Park, and he was kind of dinky. Now, he might be their most likable player, and he's one of their best players. How impressive has this turnaround been on and off the field over the last year for him?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think it's a credit mostly to him, but the organization gets a ton of credit for just allowing him to speak openly about the struggles he was having and then just giving him resources to get better and to be himself over and over again. And the transformation has been remarkable. We've had a couple times this year where, like, he made this incredible leaping catch in Toronto against the wall, actually at Fenway against the Blue Jays. Like, he goes up against the bleacher bar and takes away a sure double or triple. And I thought to myself, well, the Blue Jays were the team that were here when he lost the ball in the sun that Raimel Tapia hit, and becomes this inside the park grand slam, and Duran is slumping his shoulders and his head, and he's, you know, he's woe is me. And then this week against Kansas City, he's crushing the ball all over the place, making incredible throws and catches. And we all remember that in Kansas City 2 years ago, he was screaming at fans that were giving it to him in center field. So Those little moments have reminded me how far he's come, because he is the heartbeat of this team. He is. He's such a tone setter. And, I don't know how Christian feels about this, and I don't know whether you, Christian, had experiences when you were a player, either yourself or teammates that you knew were struggling. I think that Alex has set a tone, and the whole mental health group with the Red Sox have set this tone of, like, we're not going to ignore that stuff anymore. Failure's a part of this thing. When guys struggle, we want to hear about that. We want to support you. I think it's really cool that now they are more open to it. Even Chris Martin, who went on the IL for anxiety, I think that's a byproduct of this. And he said at the time, look, I know this is not the most macho thing to say, but I'm mentally burnt out. I'm struggling. And I just think that our culture doesn't always support that. You're supposed to be stoic and straight-faced and strong and a big male athlete. I think it's really cool that the Red Sox and probably sports overall are getting more into the idea of they're just people, and when they struggle, we should help them talk about that.
Well, I agree with you on that, and not to get into deeper conversation because we don't have time for it, but there are times when you should just suck it up and deal with it, and there are other times when you should be vocal of it. The key to me is just, identifying, which one is which, you know what I mean? And I think that's what the issue that coaches and managers have is, is he just trying to get a day off, or is there really something serious going on, or should I just make him, gut through it? But anyways, hey, I've really enjoyed our Monday conversations. I feel like this should be like a regular thing. Like, if it's okay, if you'll have us. Kyrie Irving.
Half and half. Well, pants on, pants off. It'll be fine.
I love doing this
every week. It's been fun.
Yeah, and we learned a lot, too, so I appreciate it. I know you have a day off. Enjoy the week off of no baseball, and we'll talk to you next week. There's Will Fleming. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, guys.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.